Hi, I'm Sima Shapiro, the host of the new Contemporary Lifestyle Radio Show for Women Over 40, featuring everything about your health, wealth, children, happiness, and anything else of interest to you, the listener. Please stay tuned. Today we'll be discussing various aspects of the baby boomers with a woman who has made it her career, her mission, and focus to help people in midlife and beyond challenge traditional assumptions and continue with a core path of health, wellness, and longevity. Leading gerofuturist and thought leader on the longevity economy, best-selling author Karen Sands is an advocate for the new story of our age, a visionary with wrinkles, an expert authority on midlife and beyond, women in the future, and the business of aging. She is a high-impact certified master and mentor coach and consultant trainer who empowers boomers to rock their age and inspires those who serve them to shape the world and their role in it. Her very recently released book is called The Age Way. So welcome, Karen.
I'm thrilled to be with you, Sima.
I'm thrilled to have you. And by the way, who the heck wants to say they have wrinkles?
I love having wrinkles. It shows that I earned them. Are you kidding me? Yeah, I'm really proud of them. I'm 72. I'm going to be 73 in March, and my life is on my face.
I love that. So tell me a little bit about your journey and why this is of interest to you, and then we'll start talking about the subject.
Well, you know, the story, the interest all started really, really early on, probably long before I realized that this was my destiny path, and I mean that very, very sincerely. But it was when I was about 28, my mom at the time was 59, actually, and I was a mom of little toddlers, and I had a very successful business at the same time that I was very, very involved with. And I was home, and I think the kids were in the, you know, the play area watching Sesame Street or something. And the phone rang, and at that time, this was back in the early 70s, the phones we had on the wall had those long cords. So I remember walking around the kitchen, you know, checking on the kids, doing the dishes, and then the phone rang. And I picked it up. I had no idea at that time you didn't get an identity, you know, of who was calling. So I picked it up, and my mom said, hello. I said, oh, hi, Mom. What's up? And there was something different. I didn't know. I sensed something. And she said, I need to speak to you. And I said, okay, tell me, what's up? She said, well, I just drove into a toll booth. I went, what? Yes, I just drove into a toll booth head on.
Oh.
And in that split second, obviously I knew something was changed forever. And I asked her why she did that, which was just an innocent question. I didn't know what else to say at that moment. And her answer back was, because the voices on the radio told me to.
Mm-mm-mm.
In that moment and thereafter, I knew that my life, her life, was forever gone, and in my life was forever changed. And I didn't know quite what that meant. But I knew in that moment that what I accepted as inevitable was not inevitable, that she would not be in my life, that she would be gone for me forevermore. And it then brought up, well, what's the reality of my future life and my genetics as well? And what will life look like for me then? And so it sent me on a journey. I did not want to end up like my mom at that time, 59, without a life fulfilled. She had her kids, but that was it. She always felt she was lacking in having a work life, a professional life, a reason for being beyond her kids. So I was determined that that would not be my story, that I would change that story for myself and for my kids and for generations to come. And so I started on a search to find out what does it mean then to be an older woman, to be an older person, but certainly to be an older woman. And that thread has stayed with me throughout. And every time I have veered off, and as a futurist, a trained and certified futurist, there are a lot of reasons that would pull me away from the topic of aging, which was clearly not popular when here I was in my 30s, and this event occurred. And yet each time some other event would come and swing me right back on path. And finally, I agreed that this was my destiny path, that I wasn't fighting it any longer. And so it's been a lifelong journey, certainly an adult lifelong journey. And even before this happened with my mom, I had started women's centers. This was the time of the beginning of the second wave of feminism. And I was very, very much involved with the development, both personally and professionally, for women. And I had started centers for women, which later then became growth centers for men and women. We certainly had an awful lot of men that wanted to join the pursuit of equal representation, if you would. So even back then, I remember being very young in my 30s at that time, and here I was working with guiding, doing career counseling and life planning with women that were not only in my own age, of 20s and 30s, but now with women in their 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s, and what I saw, and what I saw in the generational differences really shocked me, and again kept whispering to me that there was something here for me, and I didn't know quite what it was. And then, of course, my mom, you know, entered into Alzheimer's, and so that really pushed me in the direction. But the thread was there for a very long time. I just didn't know it. There are some very old, wonderful fairy tales and myths that talk about the spinning of the thread, of the silver thread on from an old woman's hair, and to watch that ball of thread as it rolls out and follow it rather than trying to analytically figure out what your future is. And I finally did come to a time where I stopped analytically figuring it out and followed the thread.
So if you didn't have your mother, mm-hmm. who served as a role model? And certainly you were ahead of your time, wouldn't you say? How would you find strength in doing this kind of work?
The reality is, and I write about this in The Ageless Way, actually, and in some of my other books, but the reality was, for me growing up, I had, you know, sure, there were role models for me, Golda Meir, or, you know, big names that were Madame Curie, you know, beautiful, wonderful, incredible women, but they were so far removed from my real life that they really weren't realistic role models for me. And that may not have been so for other women at the time, but pretty much so it was. And so growing up, I didn't have anybody that really represented the image or the way in which I would want to age and be recognized as an older woman. So it wasn't until really the 70s that I began to find, as these issues came up, that I began to find women that actually could be role models for me. So the more famous ones at the time, of course, were Gloria Steinem and Betty Friedan, and for me, a woman who I adore deeply is Marianne Woodman. Many of you, your listeners, may have heard of her. She's a wonderful author, and she's a Jungian. She is no longer working now, but she was a great, great mentor of mine. And there were some women like Ellie Guggenheimer, who started the New York Women's Agenda in Manhattan, women who had great impact. In fact, one of my earlier books that I published in 2012 really pulls together an assortment of women's stories from their own perspective about who they were as visionaries and women who were changing the conversation, not only about aging, but about the future for women. And those interviews actually came out of what I did. I'm kind of circling around if you don't mind, but I went back to graduate school after being in corporate America, and before that as an entrepreneur. But in corporate America is where I got my training as a futurist, and where I suddenly found myself in the piles and piles of information and research that I was studying as a futurist about the coming graying of the globe and of America. And my special interest was the graying of women. So this was back in, let's see, that was from the late 70s to the late 80s that I was really, really deeply involved in this information. And so when I decided to leave corporate at the top of my career, I had a phenomenal career, and we don't have time to go through all of that, but I was getting to be at the cutting edge of all this wonderful stuff that was coming down the pike. But I left, and I said, okay, now what do I really want to do? And so I took a good 9 months, which seems to be typical in my life when I'm making changes, multiples of nines, but so I took 9 months, and I decided I needed to explore this. You know, what did I really want to be doing? And what I came to, again, through another story, another kind of numinous experience, which got me to realize that what I needed to do was to go to postgraduate school in adult development and aging. And so I did. And at that time, Hunter University had a fabulous program in adult development and aging / gerontology. Called the Brookdale Center on Aging. And so I went there, and it was a wonderful, eye-opening experience, because when I got there, I was getting pretty frustrated, actually. I said, what am I doing? You know, I've left everything else, and I'm coming here for this. All they teach about is the disease of aging. And that is all negative, and it just didn't fit what I knew to be true. And so I approached my advisor, who was also the chairman of the department and now a very well-known name in the field of aging, and his name is Rick Moody. And I said, Rick, I think I have to quit this program. I don't think this is for me. And the long and short of this was, he challenged me in a beautiful way, and he said, well, what do you want? I said, I want a different model of aging. I want a positive model of aging, because there's so much richness in aging that we don't talk about, that we subjugate into stereotypes and negative storytelling. And so he said, okay, what would you like to do? I said, I'd like to teach a course on positive aging and conscious aging, 101, if you would, for professionals in the field to start with. And I did, and it was a big, big success. But out of that, what came was I realized I still didn't have the answers for myself about what it means to be an older person, you know. And so I started to call out, you know, reach out to people and say, I need to meet and interview women who were 60 and older, anywhere from 60 to 100-ish, right? And so I did. I interviewed hundreds of women. And it gave me a new sense, a new awareness of what aging can be, especially for women.
So let me stop you. For the listener, would you please just very briefly explain what is positive aging for you? And secondly, would I then make an assumption that you were looking to address what is now the baby boomers?
I didn't have to be. I could have been actually focusing on any demographic, because we're all aging, obviously. But at that time, my specialty became boomers. And at that time, when I graduated school and I was doing these interviews, boomers could care less.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of them. You know, I was a rarity to be even thinking about this topic. And it's interesting that a lot of people that enter the gerontology field do so like I did. Something in their personal life rocks them to the core, and they find themselves moving in that direction. I don't think that's going to be true in the future only, in other words, but the only way you enter, but it is certainly a way many, many, many of us enter.
So let's get back to the positive aging.
Yeah.
What does that mean for you?
Well, positive aging means that we have unlimited potential and possibility as we age. And I'm not sugarcoating it. That doesn't mean that I don't ache from arthritis or that I can't, you know, do an all-nighter anymore. You know, those things are true. Those are limitations, but those limitations have freed me up in another way. So the positive aging is a whole take that aging is another phase of our life course. That's really all it is. Just like adolescence, now we have the aging part of it, you know, the older aging that we're entering into. And at my age, at 73, I would call myself an older woman, obviously, but I'm also, because of my life and who I am and what life has brought me, I'm also an elder. Not everyone is an elder. So positive aging is about that. And a subset of positive aging and the possibilities that we have is called conscious aging. And conscious aging is exactly the opposite of denial that you're aging, you know, in a very simplistic form. It's really owning and embracing the whole life course and your place in it.
So can I stop you again?
Mm-hmm.
And let's try to define real briefly before our break. Who are the baby boomers as a group to you? And then their seniors, Who are they? Can you just give me a very brief...
Yeah, because there's a lot of nomenclature that's pretty false.
Yep.
So baby boomers, I, as a futurist and a gerofuturist, have claimed that 1943 as a birth date through 1967 as a birth date represent the boomer generation. There are demographers that would disagree with me by a couple of years here and there, but I and others in the field have agreed that it's 1943 to 1967.
And
so primarily now, if you're looking at it today, if you just took it as year, you know, age, it would be anyone from 50 to, let's say, 72.
And what are some very brief stats that'll help the listener define them other than age? Wealth, gender, region of the country, or you take all of this as a whole?
I take it all as a whole, but I look at, of course, the segments within that, depending on what I'm doing or what I'm working on or writing about or speaking about. But generally, it's across the country. And much of my work is also read and looked at and studied overseas as well, but I primarily focus on the U.S. That's my place. One of the things to know about boomers is that the youthful mantra that many boomers had, especially the leading-edge boomers, you know, the youthful mantra of don't trust anyone over 30 was very big, except now we're all way over 30. And in addition, what makes us so different from other groups and yet similar is that we came out so optimistic, ready to change the world. And, you know, the world was that old expression, the world was our oyster and we could grab the gem. But what happened was, of course, we got brought to our knees by the Great Recession, as did all generations, but the boomers especially, because it just completely changed how we envisioned what was before us, that we could do anything.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'd like to talk about some of the external factors, sociological, political, economic, changing nature of the American family unit. We'll be right back.
The days ahead won't be as bitter as the ones behind you. Be an optimist instead, and somehow happiness will find you. Forget what happened yesterday. I know that better.
We're back with Karen Sands, best-selling author, gerofuturist, and someone who identifies very strongly with baby boomers and those who are aging. Let's get down to the specifics about this group. I asked you before, sociological, political, economic, what are some of the external factors which are changing this?
Well, I think before we jump into that, I want to go back to answer the difference between boomers and seniors.
Sure.
Seniors is a word that boomers will not tolerate. And there is a big mistake in marketing using seniors to speak to boomers. They will go deaf. So I just cut that out. I don't believe they're seniors. There are boomers, and then the next older generation are the matures, et cetera, et cetera. And that's part of the problem that senior centers are having, by the way, around the country, is that boomers, I myself, are not attracted to a senior center. It just connotes exactly what we don't want.
Sure.
And the other one I really want to get across that's affecting all of us, and therefore boomers especially, because one, we're very much moving into our older age, and that's the longevity economy. So when you ask about what's affecting us, this is a major shift. And the longevity economy is the totality of all the services, products, anything that serves the 50-plus market. And by the way, my interest at this time, my primary interest is the 40-plus market, but the heart of that 40-plus market are the boomers. And I don't believe that boomers are the end-all, be-all, but they are the ones that are making the change. We're starting this kind of change into the longevity economy, but we are not ending it. It's not all in our hands. This is also younger generations. Gen Xers are just moving into their 50s, so they're entering into the same phase of being older, being an older adult, but also the longevity economy. So the longevity economy right now is framed as $7.1 trillion in serving the 50-plus market this year. It's expected by 2032 to be up to 13.5-plus trillion. It is an enormous opportunity that is going to and is already changing everything as it relates to our aging population, and I mean aging through the life course. When I hear, for instance, that kids don't have jobs, kids as meaning, you know, out of college, et cetera, don't have jobs, and I say, my God, who is doing this? Who's not letting them know the secret opportunities? And this is true for baby boomers switching careers as well, or encore careers, is that this entity of the longevity economy has so much potential, so much promise and possibility. Anything that is created to serve the older generation, whichever generation that is at the time, is going to serve all the generations.
I agree with you, but ageism is real.
Ageism is real, but we have to break it down, and it starts with our own internal aging, ageism first.
Well, how would you say that then if, you know, there are so many corporations who really genuinely don't want to hire anyone over, let's just say, 55, I'm just saying, how would you actually break that model?
Well, I think there are two things. For one thing, actually, there have been studies, and there were like 800 CEOs that were and HR heads that were interviewed on what they thought was over the hill, and it had been 30. It's gone up to 40, and at some point, these same people, it'll go up to 50. I mean, our lifespan now, we can live to 114. I don't know that I will, but my kids will, and certainly my grandchildren will. The human body, scientists have now declared in the Nature magazine recently that 125 is the max for the human body.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're talking about very long lifetimes. And for younger people, the scope of living 114 years of what you can do in that time frame is enormous. So I don't want kids who are doomsaying, who think the future is over, their future is enormous.
Back to the sociological aspects, in a easy bullet fashion, what are some of the things that could be done societally, politically, economically, which would change the vision and viewpoint of Americans towards this group?
Well, I think, first of all, boomers have to change their own view of themselves. But the biggest part is that boomers now are the fastest growing entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs over 55 are the most successful, more successful than their younger generations. And I believe that's where it happens for us, especially for women. We are the new entrepreneurs.
What would you say then to someone who says, I'm over 55, I can't get a job, I've been submitting resumes, or I'm over 55 and I lost my job and I can't get back in, or I'm over 55 and I see such political upheaval in the country right now that I'm not even sure where I can go as a person or where we can go as a group. What do you say to these people?
Well, I don't know about that last one. I don't know that I agree that the political upheaval is stopping us from moving around the country or whatever. But yes, there is ageism in the employee ranks, but what's changing is most of us who are in our 50s and older are knowledge workers. We have tremendous skill sets and knowledge that doesn't exist in the younger generations, not yet at any way. I mean, we've earned it. And so we will become more and more valuable. There was a study that I was involved with back in, oh God, ages ago, in the late 80s, by the Hudson Institute, which is a think tank. And the studies they did about what was the workforce for 2000 and then 2020, and here we are, we're almost into 2020 at the rate we're going. And it was that there will be a scarcity of knowledge workers and skilled trained workers, whether it's in management or not. And so this is still true. As much as the Great Recession knocked us all down, either ourselves or people we know, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's shifting because the demographics are still the same. And as more and more of us in the 50-plus or 60-plus age group leave, that's leaving an even greater scarcity to fill those spots and to get trained. So we will be the ones called back in. That's the way in which we work and the way in which we hire is all shifting. It's already beginning to shift. And it's going to shift just because it has to in addition to the fact, if things are happening as they seem to be in the elections right now, we are moving to a more open, flexible, liberal society, which should allow this understanding of the value of the older employee or the older worker. But I am even more excited about the entrepreneurial place. That's where it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, I, as a career counselor for whatever, 40 years already, maybe even more now, you know, I've seen this over and over again, but so many times it's the where you go to work is not by sending out a gazillion resumes.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, the best jobs are never through resumes anyway. They're through who you know. So it's about how you go after the job market or the position market. It's also taking a step back and saying, you know, maybe I don't belong in a large corporate environment. Maybe I do belong doing my own thing. Not everybody is made for entrepreneurship, for
sure.
You know, for sure. But there are, you know, joint ventures, co-working. There's so many different variations on the theme, and I cover this in great detail, in depth, in the book before the newest one, which came out in March, and that's called Gray is the New Green. So anyone that's looking at that question you're asking, that's the book to go to and really dive in, especially for women and for those who want to serve women.
We have 2 minutes left.
Oh,
and I
so
have
fast.
Two, yes, I have two quick questions.
Okay,
what
I'll
do you
go.
Foresee for the very near future, and what last thought would you like to leave the listener with?
I think the future is phenomenal. And if anybody is doubting it, then they should be working with me for sure. Because the future is in our hands. There is so much available to us. I want people to begin to understand what the longevity economy is and what its potential is for them and their place in it. You know, I'm just so excited about the potential for all of us.
Well, I'm excited with you since I seem to be going in that direction.
We all are, whether we want to or not.
We've been talking today with a gerofuturist, visionary, and author about life after midlife, inspiring baby boomers and those older and beyond to live with passion, purpose, and play. Karen Sands can be found at KarenSands.com. Her latest book is called The Ageless Way. Thank you so much, Karen, for joining me, and I'm sorry we don't have more time.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thanks, Emma.
Thank you to the listener for joining us. I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. And until next time, I hope you take care.